Chapter 4. Bechamps, Beacon Experiment. We may recall that it was in the Alsatian capital, Strasbourg, that Professor Bechamps achieved his first scientific triumphs, to which we have already alluded. It was there, during the course of his chemical studies, that the idea occurred to him to put the popular belief in the spontaneous alteration of cane sugar into grape sugar to the test. In those days, organic matter derived from living bodies, whether vegetable or animal, was looked upon as being dead and, according to the views held at that time, therefore liable to spontaneous alteration. This was the belief that Pasteur combated in the way that we have already criticized. Bechamp was before him in attacking the problem by methods obviously more rigid and with results that we think will now appear to be considerably more illuminating. An experiment upon starch made Bechamp doubt the truth of the popular theory that cane sugar dissolved in water was spontaneously transformed at an ordinary temperature into invert sugar, which is a mixture of equal parts of glucose and fructose, the change being technically known as the inversion of sugar. Here was a puzzle that needed investigation, and in addressing this mystery, the professor had no idea of the consequences that were to ensue. In May 1854, he started a series of observations to which he later gave the name of Expérience Maîtresse, and finally called his Beacon Experiment. It was on the 16th of May 1854 that the first of the series was commenced in the laboratory of the School of Pharmacy in Strasbourg. The experiment was concluded on the 3rd of February 1855. In this experiment, perfectly pure cane sugar was dissolved in distilled water in a glass bottle with an airtight stopper but containing a little air. This was left on the laboratory table at ordinary temperature and in diffused light. At the same time, control experiments were prepared. These consisted of solutions of distilled water and cane sugar, to one of which was added a little zinc chloride and to the others a little calcium chloride. In each one a small amount of air was left, just as in the bottle containing the first, or test, solution. These bottles were stoppered in the same way as the first, and all were left alongside each other in the laboratory. In the course of some months, the cane sugar in the distilled water was partially transformed into grape sugar, and the polarimeter showed that alteration had taken place in the medium, since there was a change in the angle of rotation. In short, an alteration had taken place, but possibly not spontaneously, for on the 15th of June molds had put in an appearance, and from that date alteration progressed much more rapidly. The following table is a brief summary of the results of Bechamp's experiments. Bechamp prepared solutions of cane sugar, 16.365 grams in 100 cubic centimeters of various solvents, and polarized each of these solutions several times at varying intervals, obtaining certain variations in the angle of rotation. Professor Bechamp took particular note of the molds, and found it significant that none had appeared in the solutions to which he had added zinc chloride and calcium chloride. Moreover, that the change in rotation in these had been almost negligible, or, as he put it, the plane of polarization underwent no change other than accidental variations. Bechamp published this experiment in the report of the French Academy of Science on the 19th of February 1855. He mentioned the molds, without attempting to explain their appearance. He reserved their further consideration for future experiments, feeling it important to find the explanation as a probable clue to the cause of what had up to that time been regarded as evidence of spontaneous generation. He was also anxious to discover what was the chemical mechanism of the alteration of sugar, and why a change had not been effected in the solutions to which the chlorides had been added. Meanwhile, another observer, M. Mamenet, was also experimenting, and though Bechamp disagreed with his conclusions, he was much struck by the observations that were presented to the Academy of Science on 7 April 1856, and published in the Annales de Chimie et de Physique in September 1856. Mamenet's experiments were also concerned with polarimetric measurements. The following table summarizes his principal results. Bechamp here saw his own observations borne out. On pages 50 and 51 of Les Microzymes he tells us the two questions that had arisen in his mind through his own and Mamenet's experiments. Are molds endowed with chemical activity? And what is the origin of the molds that appear in sugared water? With a view to finding an answer to these questions, he commenced at Strasbourg on 25 June 1856, a fresh series of experiments that were completed at Montpellier on 5 December 1857. Thus it was during the course of this work that he left Strasbourg to continue his career at the famous Southern University. The following table shows his new observations. The results clearly demonstrated the varying effects of different salts upon the medium, which Bechamp himself has pointed out in the second chapter of Les Microzymas. As also shown by the earlier experiment, zinc chloride and calcium chloride prevented the alteration of cane sugar, and a very small quantity of creosote, or of mercuric chloride, had the same preventive influence. This was not the case with arsenious acid when present in very small proportion, or with certain other salts, which did not hamper the appearing of molds and the alteration of the cane sugar. Indeed, some of the salts seem to stimulate the advent of molds, while, on the contrary, creosote, which has only since the date of these experiments been distinguished from carbolic acid, was particularly effective in the prevention of molds and of alteration in the sugar. With his characteristic precision, Professor Bechamp determined to investigate thoroughly the role of creosote, and with this aim in view started on 27 March 1857 another series of experiments, which he also continued up to 5 December of the same year. His account of the procedure followed in these experiments is as follows. I prepared several sugared solutions according to the technique of the anti-heterogenists. That is to say, the water used was boiled and cooled in such a manner that air could enter only after passing through tubes containing sulfuric acid. This water dissolved the sugar very rapidly, and several jars were completely filled with the carefully filtered solution, so as to leave no air in them. Another part of the solution, having no creosote added to it, was poured into jars in contact with a considerable quantity of common air, without any care other than that of cleanliness. One of the jars contained also some arsenious acid. One jar of the creosoted solution and one without creosote were set apart, not to be opened throughout the whole course of the experiment. The following table gives a summary of the observations. Bechamp has himself explained the results. Flasks 1 and 2 lost a little liquid during manipulation, and thus were not completely filled. Consequently, air came into contact with the solutions they held, and, in these, molds appeared and alteration in the medium ensued, the dates differing in the two cases and the variation proving more rapid in the flask where the molds were the more abundant. On the contrary, the sugared water kept free from contact with air during the 8 months of observation underwent no change, despite the warm climate of Montpellier during the months of June, July, August and September. This was noteworthy, for there was nothing to prevent the action of the water, had spontaneous alteration been nature's method, which was the then prevalent opinion. Furthermore, although the creosated solutions were in contact with air from the start, and these particular flasks were left open, they underwent no variation and showed no trace of molds, not even the solution to which arsenious acid had been added. Finally, to return to solution number 2, molds appeared before the 30th of May, with evidence on that date of a diminution of the rotation, which continued to decline, in spite of the fact that on the 30th of June one drop of creosote was added. Bechamp tells us in the preface to The Blood that these different observations impressed him in the same way as the swing of the cathedral lamp had impressed Galileo in the 16th century. At the time, it was commonly believed that fermentation could not take place except in the presence of albuminoid matter. We have already seen that Pasteur operated with yeast broth, a complex albuminoid solution. In the media prepared by Bechamp there were, on the contrary, no albuminoid substances. He had operated with carefully distilled water and pure cane sugar, which, so he tells us, when heated with fresh slaked lime, did not disengage ammonia. Yet molds, obviously living organisms and thus necessarily containing albuminoid matter, had appeared in his chemical solutions. He was awestruck by his discovery, his intellect already affording him hints of all it portended. Had he been Pasteur, the country would have rung with the news of it, he would have described the facts by letter to all his acquaintances. Instead, being Bechamp, without a thought of self, his only anxiety was to start new experiments, and consider fresh revelations. He recorded the results of his observations in a memoir which he sent up immediately, in December 1857, to the Academy of Science, which published an extract of it among its reports of 4 January 1858. The full publication of this all-important document was deferred, for some unknown reason, for 8 months, when it appeared in September 1858 in the Annales de Chimie et de Physique. The title of the memoir was on the influence that water, either pure or charged with various salts, exercises in the cold upon cane sugar. Bechamp comments, By its title, the memoir was a work of pure chemistry, which had at first no other object than to determine whether or not pure cold water could invert cane sugar, and if, further, the salts had any influence on the inversion. But soon the question, as I had foreseen, became complicated. It became at once physiological and dependent upon the phenomena of fermentation and the question of spontaneous generation. Thus, from the study of a simple chemical fact, I was led to investigate in turn the causes of fermentation, the nature and origin of ferments. The overall result of the experiments was to confirm that cold water modifies cane sugar only in proportion to the development of molds, these elementary vegetations then acting as ferments. Here at one stroke was felled the theory of alteration through the action of water, the change known as fermentation being declared to be due to the growth of living organisms. Furthermore, it was proved that molds do not develop when there is no contact with air and that no change then takes place in the rotary power. And also that the solutions that had come into contact with air varied in proportion to the development of molds. The necessity of the presence of these living organisms for the processes of fermentation was thus shown clearly. Bechamp further explained the action of molds. They act after the manner of ferments. Whence comes the ferment? In these solutions there existed no albuminoid substance. They were made with pure cane sugar, which, heated with fresh slaked lime, does not give off ammonia. It thus appears evident that airborne germs found the sugared solution a favorable medium for their development, and it must be deduced that the ferment is produced by the generation of fungi. Here, in direct contradiction to Pasteur's account of the spontaneous origin of beer yeast and other organisms, Bechamp gave proof of Schwann's concept of airborne germs, and further specified yeast to be of the order of fungi. Remarkable though such a clear pronouncement was at a date when scientific ideas were in chaotic confusion, Bechamp went much further in his observations. He stated, "The matter that develops in the sugared water sometimes presents itself in the form of little isolated bodies, and sometimes as voluminous colorless membranes which come out in one mass from the flasks. These membranes, heated with caustic potash, give off ammonia in abundance." Here he noted the diversity of the organisms of these molds, an observation that was to result in a deep insight into cellular life and his foundation of a first proper understanding of cytology. He had a further definite explanation to make on the action of molds, namely, "The transformation that cane sugar undergoes in the presence of molds may be compared with that produced upon starch by diastase." This particular conclusion, he tells us, had an enormous bearing on the subject, and was such a novel idea at that epoch that Pasteur, even later, ignored and denied it. Bechamp further explained that, cold water does not act upon cane sugar, except when molds are able to develop in it. In other words, the transformation is due to a true fermentation and to the development of an acid that is consecutive to the appearance of the ferment. So, it was by the acids engendered by the molds that he explained the process of fermentation. He drew many more conclusions from the effects of various salts upon the solutions. Had Lord Lister only followed Bechamp's teaching instead of Pasteur's, the former might have been spared his subsequent honest recantation of his invention, the carbolic spray, which proved fatal to so many patients. Bechamp taught that creosote, in preventing the development of molds, also checks the transformation of cane sugar. Also, creosote, with or without prolonged contact with air, prevents at one and the same time the formation of molds and the transformation of cane sugar. But from observation, it appears that once the molds are formed, creosote does not prevent their action. Drawing more conclusions from the effects of different salts, he stated, "The influence of saline solutions is variable, not only according to the sort or kind of salt, but moreover according to the degree of saturation and neutrality of these salts. The salts that prevent the transformation of cane sugar into glucose grape sugar are generally the salts reputed to be antiseptic. In all cases, a certain minimum temperature is necessary for the transformation to take place." Thus we see that in 1857, when fermentation was such a complete mystery that Pasteur, operating with albuminoid matters, including dead yeast, looked upon this yeast and other organisms as products of spontaneous generation, Bechamp had dispelled all uncertainty on the subject. To summarize, he taught, first, that cane sugar was a proximate principle unalterable by solution in water. Second, that the air had in itself no effect upon it. but that owing to its importation of living organisms, the apparent effect of air was all important. Third, that these organisms, insoluble themselves, brought about the process of fermentation by means of the acids they generated. These acids were regarded as the soluble ferments. Fourth, that the way to prevent the invasion of organisms in the sugared solution was by first slightly creosoting the medium, but if the organisms had appeared before creosote was added, he showed that its subsequent addition would have no power to arrest their development and the consequent inversion of the sugar. For further revelations, we cannot do better than quote these paragraphs from Beauchamp's own summary of his discovery in the preface to Le Sang, The Blood. There he writes, "It resulted that the soluble ferment was allied to the insoluble by the reaction of product to producer, the soluble ferment being unable to exist without the organized ferment, which is necessarily insoluble. Further, as the soluble ferment and the albuminoid matter, being nitrogenous, could only be formed by obtaining the nitrogen from the limited volume of air left in the flasks, it was at the same time demonstrated that the free nitrogen of the air could help directly in the synthesis of the nitrogenous substance of plants, which up to that time had been a disputed question. Thus it became evident that since the material forming the structure of molds and yeasts was elaborated within the organism, it must also be true that the soluble ferments and products of fermentation are also secreted there, as was the case with the soluble ferment that inverted the cane sugar. Hence I became assured that that which is called fermentation is, in reality, the phenomenon of nutrition, assimilation, disassimilation, and excretion of the products disassimilated." Thus we see how clear and complete was Beauchamp's explanation of fermentation as long ago as the year 1857. He showed it to be due to the life processes of living organisms so minute as to require a microscope to render them visible, and in the case of his sugared solutions, he proved them to be airborne. Not only was he clearly the first to solve the problem, his initial discovery was also to lead him a great deal farther. Unfortunately, far beyond the understanding of those who, lacking his understanding, became obsessed with the idea of atmospheric organisms. But before we proceed to delve deeper into Beauchamp's teachings, let us pause and return to Pasteur, and see how his work was affected by the great beacon with which his rival had illumined science.